Here is the sermon for May 31st, 2015 at Southminster Presbyterian Church. The sermon text is Luke chapter 4, verses 16 through 30. It is Luke's version of Jesus' first sermon. And the title is, We Are All Prophets. Well, we're nearing the end of the season of spring. In a few weeks, it will be summer. Notice this, but the days are longer in the north than in the south. It's like, wow, it's light and it's 9:10. It's light in the morning, and then it gets dark, though, doesn't it? Right, the inverse is true in the winter. I don't know, you just listen to those funny things when you move to a new place. But anyway, we are nearing the end of spring, and during spring, we've been reflecting on the creation spirituality path of the Via Transformativa, the fancy Latin phrase for the way of justice making and compassion, the way of transformation. And this is the dream of the individual and the world transformed. So it is the season of our aspirations. And the Bible is filled with mythological symbols that describe that, the promised land, which we heard. Also, the new creation, a new heaven and a new earth. In the final verses of the book of Revelation, we read, Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. In this new city, all tears are wiped away, and all the saints reign forever in the light of the Lamb. It's a dream. We are dreamers. The one speech of Martin Luther King that everyone knows is, I have a dream. Now, he delivered a lot of speeches, many filled with detailed analysis of the world's injustices and strategies to overcome them. But it was the dream speech that captured the nation's heart. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. That speech is in our bones now. Perhaps the most interesting and important feature of the human species is the drive to articulate dreams and aspirations. Our dreams and our hopes are what give us meaning and purpose. We all have dreams, and we all have had them. We have dreams for ourselves, for successful careers, to fall in love, to have a home, to raise happy, good-looking children who are above average. And of course, we adjust our dreams as we add on the years. I no longer dream of playing second base for the New York Mets. But who knows, my nephew might. I can dream for him. And of course, while we are dreaming, life happens. And our dreams may need adjustment. And for a time, even they may disappear. Our former dreams may be taunting reminders of what can never be. And those are the walking in the dark times. But even such, in time, dreams return. And we dare to dream again. Dreaming is risky because the flames of disappointment scorch and no one is eager to be exposed to that again. But nonetheless, we dream because we are human and we have no choice. When dreams stop, we enter the fog of non-existence. And the people for whom we build monuments and name libraries and streets were usually, not in all cases, but often big dreamers. Their dreams moved beyond their personal welfare or the welfare of their immediate kin. They dreamed about a transformed world. And a great exercise, if you have a moment for meditation, is to make a list of dreamers that come to mind and what their dreams were, and then ask why those ones came to mind for you. Now, some of these dreamers were not honored in their lifetimes. I personally light candles for the heretics who were hounded and defamed, even executed, for articulating dreams that afflicted the comfortable and comforted the afflicted. From Galileo to Darwin to Susan B. Anthony to Rachel Carson, we owe a great debt to those who told the truth as they saw it, when the truth they were telling wasn't popular. And of course, the biggest heretic of all time is the one for whom our religion is founded. I think we should shudder every day at the irony that the heretic extraordinaire, Jesus of Nazareth, was named as the founder of an institution that hounded heretics. Ironic also that the one we turned into a god had said in so many words, "Don't turn people into gods." Mark 10:17-18. As he was setting out on a journey, a man ran up and knelt before him and asked him, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one's good but God alone." The historical Jesus consistently refused the pedestal. You know, we really aren't sure what to do with dreamers and prophets and poets. Two choices, it seems. We kill them or turn them into gods. Often both. Kill them, then divinize them. Dead gods make no trouble. It's the live humans that are the problem. Dorothy Day, founder of the Catholic worker movement, was starting to hear rumblings of her praises, and she said, "Don't you dare call me a saint. You won't get rid of me that easily." Despite her protests, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops voted to canonize her anyway. Once you're dead, you can't complain. Prophets and poets are problematic because they dream. They dream of the end of poverty, homelessness, war, and inequality. We all dream those things, right? We all think they're great ideas. Sure, or we should. But the prophets and poets put a fine point on it. They tend to name names and point to causes of these ills and make us feel a little uncomfortable, well, a lot uncomfortable, because these causes can hit close to home. Speaking of home, that's where Jesus preached his first sermon, according to Luke. Now, the sermon and the whole story is likely an exaggeration by Luke. The whole scene appears fabricated. The Jesus seminar voted it all black, except for one phrase that may have gone back to Jesus. Truth is, no prophet is welcome on his home turf. Now, the story is not history for a number of reasons. Jesus, as a member of the peasant class, likely would not have been able to read or write. And the kind of the supernatural element of Jesus being divinely protected from being thrown from a cliff show us that we're really in the realm of storytelling. But most importantly, the story fits the theological pattern of the author of Luke Acts. And that theme is Jews rejecting Jesus and then Gentiles receiving him. And that's an unfortunate pattern throughout Luke Acts. And in this particular story, Luke creates a scene of Jesus returning home from doing his wonder working and healing, and he preaches in the local synagogue. And the folks like him at first, then they turn against him when he says all this good stuff is not going to happen to them, but to the outsiders instead. Now, there's truth in this story, even though the truth is not historical. One truth is that prophets are not welcome, especially in their hometowns. And another truth is that prophets are not welcome most anywhere. Now, that has nothing to do with Jew or Gentile or Luke's supersessionist theology, and that's the fancy word for replacement theology, that Christianity replaced Judaism as God's favorite religion. Prophets are rejected because they tell painful truths. And Luke was right about that regarding Jesus. Jesus was a Jew from birth to death. He had no intention of starting a new religion. He did speak of a transformed world. And the metaphor of choice was kingdom of God. He spoke as prophets and poets before him and after him did, of justice for the poor and love for enemy. And it was very much in line with the tradition of the Hebrew prophets and the Hebrew wisdom sages. So Luke was right to put on the lips of Jesus those profound, prophetic, powerful words of the Hebrew prophet Isaiah. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he's anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. I'm certain that the historical Jesus knew those words because he lived them. And I also think Jesus dreamed that the world could be transformed nonviolently. Violent uprisings were not going to get people where they needed to go. If we were going to get to a world that lifted up the lowly, filled the hungry with good things, lived in peace with neighbor, we weren't going to get there with violence. And in the year 2015, following a century of war, we ought to know that by now. Historical Jesus scholar Dominic Crossan says, we are addicted to violence like a drug, and we need a 12-step program to beat it. Not only do we need to listen to poets, prophets, and dreamers, we need to be poets, prophets, and dreamers. You see, the dreamer and poet and the prophet is always mocked and always put down as silly and impractical. They're called dreamers, right? This is the real world, so we're told. And in the real world, you need guns, lots of them. In the real world, security trumps freedom. In the real world, you need to extract the oil and gas faster and faster, and green energy is for, well, dreamers. In the real world, you get peace through domination and power. In the real world, you pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and those who don't have deserved it. But the poets and the prophets know that isn't the truth. What we confuse with reality is nothing more than fear trying to gain power. The real power is in the truth. The real power is found in the words of poets and prophets who did not allow the bullies to silence them. They said, in spite of threats and bluster, this is what I see. Can you see it too? It is the poets and the prophets who turn the world around and who show us possibility, who ignite our dreams. And when our dreams are ignited, they join with the dreams of others. And out of that, possibility arises that no individual can see or calculate or even understand. Dreams inspire dreams, and they build and they grow and they take on a life of their own. And that, my friends, is the Spirit of God. We are an aspiring species, and we can do better than follow the wisdom of the so-called realists who can't see beyond the next voting cycle. We are so much more important than that. We, that is, human beings, are the consciousness, the language, the poetry, the music, the meaning, the dream of the universe. It took 13.8 billion years for you to get here. It took all of that time and all of those reactions and all of that evolution for you to be here. All of this complexity is incredible, and it isn't over. These dreams, hopes, and aspirations for humanity's flourishing are real. That's the really real. We don't need to destroy what we've received with guns and selfishness and short-sightedness. We don't need to calculate the future. We just need to be open to it. And we need to articulate it and trust it. We need to accept the assignment, the calling, that each of us is a poet. Each of us is a prophet. Each of us is a dreamer. I know it's painful. It's hard to dream when we grieve. It's hard to dream when we're afraid. But it is during these times, in this time, that we have no other choice but to dream. Because that is what it means to be given the gift of humanity. This life is a gift, and we can never, ever forget that. It's a gift to use. If you are alive, this is your moment. This is your time to participate in the Spirit. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he's anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor.